thanks very much and good afternoon to you. I'm delighted to be here. The research I'm presenting is the UK leg of a bigger study, a bigger international study run by the ISI, International Central Institute for Youth and Educational Television. You may know their work. They're based in Munich. They're attached, if you like, to their public service broadcaster in Munich, but their research is truly international in flavour, and with this particular study also has the benefit of having a longitudinal comparison as well. The main focus of the study is gender representation, and we look at that both on screen and off screen, but other aspects of diversity is considered as well, because that's what we coded for. Now, mention of the word coding, it's mainly quantitative in nature, this worldwide study. But the coding itself, as you will see once we come to the actual kind of statistics, was very nuanced and labour-intensive, because we were looking at things like whether characters were protagonists or antagonists, the kind of constellations that they operated in, duos, as loners, as part of a team, the settings in which they appear, and the resources that they use to solve problems. So any one of these features could also be looked at in terms of the characteristics of the character, including gender, age, socioeconomic status, race and ethnicity, and even things like hair colour, body type, and hypersexualisation. So, first study was carried out in 2007. The sample that I'm using was drawn from a week in 2017. The analysis was carried out in 2018, and it's now that the research reports are beginning to be published. There were more participating countries in 2007, but to allow for a kind of fair comparison, this longitudinal aspect, we're referring within this presentation and within the current report to 8 countries that were consistent across both groups. So Belgium, Canada, Cuba, Germany, Israel, Taiwan, the UK and the USA. So quite a good global comparison to be drawn upon. Right, so what is the actual sort of nature of the study? Well, each country was asked to record 200 to 300 hours of children's TV content. And the idea was that this sample was to represent a notional week of the most kind of popular or the most easily accessible content. And this was drawn from October and November 2017. Each country used exactly the same codebook in order to process this, to code this data. And as I say, it was returned in spring last year. There's already been top-level findings presented, and you can access the reports, and I really would strongly urge you to do so via the link, because what I present here today is really just a snapshot. It's just an overview of some of the kind of striking statistics from the survey. Okay, so my sample, what do you do when you're asked to sort of sample children's content? I chose CBB, CBBC and CITV and Milkshake, and I've written quite a robust defence, if you like, of this sample as being from the free-to-air space. Now, I do hope there's nobody here from Tiny Pop that is going to say to me, why did you not include Tiny Pop? I think I'll have to go back and maybe do a tiny sample from them. This meant 993 programmes, it was 146 hours of fiction programmes, which is our focus today. Of the programmes that I coded, about approximately 70% of the content was fiction and 30% non-fiction, but I'm concentrating today on the fiction programmes, of which there were 695 in number. There were 2,959 fictional characters that required coding. So I think what you're already beginning to understand, that although this was a a quantitative project where you're assigning a numerical code for each kind of characteristic or value, the decision-making process itself was quite subjective, nuanced, and actually quite difficult at times to draw a decision on which category certain things fell into. One of the things that I think we can safely say, particularly on in international comparison, is that if we take diversity to mean a whole range of things, as well as our more usual kind of ethnographic aspects, if we think about diversity as always encompassing genre within programming, that the UK does fare very, very well in the range of offers that it makes to children. It's well below the international average for animation programme, and also this figure of 59.8% of the fiction programming was animation is not only below the international average, but it's certainly gone down from the 2007 category as well. This is also reflected in the fact that live action is a strong category, and having said that animation has gone down since 2007, live action has gone up. Puppets, mixtures, other genres. I take Skins, programmes like In the Night Garden, for example, to represent those categories. So, a strong range of programming, and one of the things that we're particularly interested in, always wanting to sort of protect the UK production base, of course, is this idea of origin of production. Where is the content coming from? Again, internationally, in international comparison, the UK is faring very, very well in terms of domestic production. Currently, in the current survey, 62.6 of the fiction programmes that I coded were domestic productions originating in the UK, and with 36.6 of the sample being an international co-production or a foreign import programme. Though these figures, I would say, are healthy and certainly way, way, way above, as we'll see in the next slide, international comparison, we can see that they have that there is a drop in domestic production nonetheless, which might be a trend. And one of the things I would ask you to remember is the sample was essentially the free-to-air public service broadcasters and the commercial public service broadcasters. So that, I would say, probably accounts for the very strong showing of domestic production in the sample. International comparison, you can see we are way, 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 way above top of the tree, really, for this domestic production. Still, even though it's decreased slightly from 10 years ago, it's still way above the average of 32.4%. However, what you can see there is Cuba having a strong domestic production. This was a complete turnaround for them. But what is interesting about the Cuba sample is that it was very, very small, because there's very little children's programmes broadcast at all. So therefore, although it would appear to have a strong domestic production base, that is not actually true, because the sample was quite small and difficult to find for the researcher. Okay, so as I say, the main aspect is really this aspect of gender. And again, the UK can be considered to be doing well in terms of it has a higher number of female main characters than the international average. The international average is 34.7. And the UK is 36.4. But if we think about gender balance as being roughly 50-50, we can see that these are really still pretty poor figures. 36.4 of our main characters are female, 59.2 of our main characters are male. It is, nonetheless, something of an improvement from 2007, but I would say, I think we could all agree that there would seem to be still quite a lot of work to be done in achieving even the basics of sort of gender balance in our children's content.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Sorry, what would you categorise as the
category? Are you looking at the neutral category?
Yeah, what would you put under that?
Right, I made a specific point of re-looking at the neutral character. There was hardly anything, there's a bagpipe character in the Clangers that was considered gender neutral. There were actually other categories. There were transgender and other categories, but if there was no showing within them in the fiction shows, which there weren't, but there were actually in the non-fiction shows, because we have transgender children's TV presenters, we have characters, and certainly there has been, I'm thinking of the Prix Jeunesse, and it has a particular kind of push towards promoting transgender drama. There were other categories, sometimes they're collapsed in, and if there hasn't been a coding in that category, it wouldn't be shown. So, I'd specifically looked and thought, what was a neutral character? And it was this bagpipe character from the Clangers. Okay, so we're not just thinking, therefore, about gender sort of just in terms of surface representation. We're looking at somehow how that will operate within the narrative. So this idea of how our characters actually... How are they located socially or their function within the narrative? So do they operate as a loner, within a duo, or within a team? And this category of teams has shown absolutely enormous increase from 2007. In 2007, the groups or teams were 56.4% for the UK, whereas now this is the most used category. So most of our narratives with children in children's television will have a kind of cast or team of characters rather than being a sort of a single entity or a duo. These things also map out into sort of other nuanced aspects that might be considered more hierarchical, about whether you're a leader, a follower, or whether that's a kind of equal or mixed responsibility within the narrative. But I think we can see here that in the leader category, certainly males, the boys at 31.1% and females at 18.5%. So if you're a leader, you are more likely to be a boy within the narrative. This followers category has really reduced as of leaders, and this, as I say, this massive rise in what we see as kind of equal or more democratic leadership and responsibility and authority within the text. But certainly more male characters than female are portrayed as leaders. This is quite interesting internationally as well, because the UK actually kind of bucks a trend. It's always slightly different from its international comparators. Here we get into the human characters only in the narrative, and we're looking at skin colour. So still very strong showing. The white Caucasian characters are the most prevalent, 73.6%. And our black characters at 16.4% are well above the sort of international average, and are considered to be, the UK content is considered to be strong at representing black characters, but other minority ethnicities are leave something to be desired, is how it's being represented. Note has been made of shows like Bob the Builder and Rusty Rivets, who have deliberately, if you like, introduced black characters into their text. And this is seen as a significant improvement from the 2007 statistics as well. One of the things that Izzy look at in their research, which we might think, oh, well, we're so over that, is hair colour. If you think of shows like Shimmer and Shine, Winx Club is the kind of, you know, the famous one, where we're looking at very sort of gendered hair colours, pink and lilac and purple hair colours. The range of colour available to female is far greater than it is to male counterparts. And there's always a strange showing of redheads in the UK sample, where redheads are quite prevalent. But redheaded characters are three times more likely to be female than they are with male. And there has been a remarkable growth in this category. In 2007, 4.3% of characters were redheads, and in the current stats, it's 11.9% have red hair, and mostly accounted for by females. As I say, we might think this is something that we've sort of processed and moved on from, but certainly in the Cuban sample, the preference is still for slim, blonde females as central characters. Okay, age of protagonists. We're talking about children's content. One might assume, therefore, that the kind of child category, the 6 to 12-year-old, would be the most sort of represented group, but not so. Certainly in the UK content, the youth or the teenager is the strongest kind of representation with 42.6%. And adults also. There is a good showing of adults and sort of teenagers within the narratives. But what we can see is that the elderly are somewhat underrepresented given what a large section of the community they make. But again, we kind of point to particularly good examples, like with Dennis and Nasher, there's the kind of groovy granny. Kazoops also, I think, has a really kind of strong elderly character. Okay, I'll just keep going through. So body weight. Now, there's also a hypersexualisation category. I think I only coded one as hypersexualised, and it was linked also to very, very thin body weight, and that was a character, Starfire, from Teen Titans Go. I haven't included any of these images in my presentation because I don't have the permission to do that, and also, you know, you can look them up for yourself. Most of our characters are presented within a normal body weight range. If it's an overweight character, it's more likely to be a boy, and if it's very thin or thin, it's more likely to be a girl. That's a sort of adding in the gender dynamic to these other codings. As to disability, I think we are still pretty poor at representing disability in our children's content. Standout might be the blonde girl in the wheelchair in Fireman Sam, but in the sample I had, I was struggling to code particular disabilities, 95% of our characters have no obvious disability. I would also make note of a show like Pablo, with the character, you know, autism, and actually autism being the sort of focus of the show, if you like. So more nuanced things, the resources used to solve problems. This very much bucks the international trend, the UK content, and I think it is linked to the fact that our narratives are often team narratives or group narratives. So we've got talking is really the most used resource to solve problems across our content. And what's interesting is even in shows like Young Dracula, where there would be the option of sort of magical resolution to problems, that it's actually still comes down to talking, negotiation, and this sort of idea of a discursive process of problem solving. This also, you can see, has a gendered aspect to it, with physical power, which might be strength or just, you know, some kind of athletic prowess or some aspect of physicality being more often a male resource, 17.8%, than female resource at 10.8%. Okay, so as we can see, this is really quite striking in international comparison, with talking at 51.9%, and we seem to now think that magic is a bit old hat, where that's not a common resource at the moment within the trend, and the science and technology skills also quite strongly represented. Okay, so I'm going to move on a little bit now just to give you a flavour of the off-screen gender diversity, which was a newly introduced category into the codings. So this data relates to 2007. Again, it's only using the fiction aspects. It's only using the fiction programming. Which means there's actually, I've got loads of data that I can still process, I can still code, I can still, and I think we might get different results in the non-fiction content. I would suggest that, for example, domestic production will be even greater within the non-fiction content than the fiction. We can see that the role of director within the content still remains very much male-dominated, with 56.1%, and then there's a kind of breakdown of teams that women in the sample accounted only for 8.6 of this director role, and teams with women 6.8%, which is even less than teams without women at 9.1%. So nearly a tenth of the sample were a team without a woman in this directorial role. Producer, this starts to get a little bit more even, where a specific producer is attributed or it becomes a team. This becomes a bit more even-handed now, with 31.5% of the producer role being fulfilled by a woman and 21.2% for a man. And teams with women, again, that's strong, 29.4%, but a team without women, still a sizeable chunk. So screenplay, again, it's becoming a little bit more even-handed, 18.3% women, and a team with a woman in it, 28.1%. I would say, back to thinking about the earlier premise that we should really be looking for sort of 50-50 gender representation, although we can see improvement and think, well, these are reasonably healthy, there's still quite a bit of work to be done. This creator category is a problematic category. If we think of products that are actually ascribed, you know, they're actually said created by, you can think of The Simpsons or SpongeBob, you know, that they have a credited creator that comes up almost, you know, sort of in the opening credits. That might not be appropriate for, you know, most children's content, but it is striking that women aren't often attributed with being the creator. It's more likely to be a man. So 25.5 in the particular sample I was looking at, and 15.8 for women. Okay, so that sort of just brings me to a close. Really, it's just points for discussion, in that I will attend the Prix Jeunesse where we did the headline findings, and there's a sort of round of applause for the UK still being held up to be producers of fantastic content, and still statistically, if you like, we are still leading the field. But the answer is there's still so much to be done that we haven't even achieved a sort of basic level of gender equality, never mind sort of other diversity aspects that still need to be addressed. So it's certainly not a case of us kind of resting on our laurels, even if in an international comparison it seems as if we are doing well. I would also like to say, would we have a similar picture without the PSBs? Will it be different when I look at the non-fiction content? And I also wonder if the concerns about diversity are actually going to be better served in some ways by the commercial sector trying to tap into bigger international markets rather than the kind of PSB thrust of fair representation. We've got areas for improvement. I think the statistics speak for themselves, particularly in disability, particularly in the gender makeup of teams within the narrative. That's an easy fix. Why, if you're creating a team of characters, and let's say the team is five people, why is it always a 2-3 split, female to male? To me, the team scenario is a very, very easy fix, and the gender makeup of production teams, I think, sort of should really be the same. Okay, so the thing I'm interested in is that everything I'm presented here, one of the reasons why Izzy have looked at fiction in particular is because they think that represents a choice. It represents an individual person's choice, whether it's a commissioner, whether it's a casting agent, whether it's a director, a producer. Every single element of those statistics has represented a decision on the part of a person in the industry. So I just sort of want you to think, what will the picture be in another 10 years? Thank you.